Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com, will join me. We're going to break down an instant classic, Florida's double OT win over Michigan at the Jumpman Invitational at Spectrum Center in Charlotte on Tuesday night. Fantastic game. It was a privilege to be there. Really cool to meet some of you guys. As always, love meeting the men and women that listen to our pod. Really fun and rewarding to do that. So thank you for everyone that reached out, came and said hello. We will talk about Michigan, preview Grambling State, which is Florida's pre-Christmas game. You know, the Dazzlers and the Santa costumes, always a good tradition. And then Quinnipiac, which is Florida's weekend game on New Year's weekend, which hopefully will be well attended as Florida's first weekend home game of the season. So enjoy the show. Merry Christmas to everybody that's celebrating. Happy holidays to all of you. Happy New Year. We will be back with an episode prior to the New Year, but, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Thank you all so, so much for your support. Florida Basketball Hour podcast is brought to you by the Gatorverse, an exclusive community dedicated to connecting University of Florida fans and student-athletes. Members receive access to exclusive autographed collectibles, real-life experiences, giveaways, VIP events, rewards, and athletes receive a majority of revenue from sales of their collectibles. That's the way that NIL is supposed to work. To find out more about becoming a Gatorverse member and Locker Mania, visit Gatorverse.io. That's GatorVerse.io. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. I am going to be joined by Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com, on this episode, as usually is the case. We have a lot to talk about. I mean, this is going to be a fun show, largely thanks to a big win for Florida. I was there in the building at the Spectrum Center on Tuesday night. The Gators beat Michigan 106-101 in double overtime. Just an incredible college basketball game. A nice environment. A good amount of fans there from both sides. Probably a little less crowded than the Virginia-Florida game earlier in the year was, mainly because Virginia brought more people. I thought the Gators actually brought more people to this game, and then Michigan didn't travel tremendously, but there's always Michigan fans pretty much everywhere. So they were there in full force. Look, this was a game that, you know, I think very easily, if you think about, like, just like Florida could have lost this game so many different ways. And, you know, I think the first thing to kind of note as we welcome Eric into the show is that Florida just kept finding ways to either claw back in the game or obviously let's just say like two Zion Pullen three-pointers, one off what I thought was just a spectacularly heady play by Alex Condon, actually, to kind of set up the actual, even the fact that Ford even got a shot, and then Zion Pullen making kind of a laser beam triple that hit nothing but net with 7 seconds to go in the first overtime. So two huge three-pointers are really the reason that Florida gets a quad one resume win as opposed to a really tough loss.
Yeah, that was a big one. I think that everything we've kind of talked about with recent Florida teams, and of course this year, and even when the kind of transfer class was established, one of the questions we had was just okay, who's going to have the ball and their hands at the end of close games, who has that kind of one-on-one playmaking ability. And kind of our thought at the time was Zion Pullen, and I definitely think that appears to be down the stretch. And when I say down the stretch, I feel like, you know, in a double overtime game, there's kind of three down the stretches. And I think in a game where, I guess we'll get into the story of what I think was this game, but it just seemed like he was dominant at the end. And really, I think the story of this game to me was Florida's depth. And I've said many times on the podcast throughout the years that I do think depth is overrated. But it doesn't mean that it's worthless when I say it's overrated. And it's one of those things where Florida has good depth. Michigan has essentially zero depth. For those of you who didn't realize or didn't know, like, so of course, like in a double overtime game, there was, 50 minutes a game action. There's 250 minutes available to players. So like Florida had like 85 minutes from their bench. Michigan had 12. I forget who had 5 and who had 7, but it was Will Shedder and Jalen Llewellyn. And Jalen Llewellyn, you know, came in and hit a 3 and hobbled back on defense because he's not healthy and he had a bad turnover, and that was in the second half. And I think that was his last time on the floor. But like, they essentially, you know, Michigan had 2 guys off the bench that played a combined 12 minutes. Like, they had nothing going. And for Florida, it was having Zion Pullen and Alex Condon, who, you know, Alex Condon played fantastic and Zion Pullen played fantastic. You bring those guys off the bench against a team that has nothing going off the bench, and then you play 2 extra overtime periods. I just felt like Florida completely outlasted Michigan. We know that the Wolverines have not been very good defensively. And for a team that struggles defensively, kind of the end of regulation, and especially that second overtime, like their feet were in cement. They just couldn't guard anyone. They could not compete on the glass. I mean, you saw like Tyree Samuel had a couple clutch offensive rebounds. And when you look at the film again, it's like there was like 3 Gators who could have got the offensive rebound because every one of them was elevated above Michigan players and were completely unboxed out because Michigan had just completely ran out of gas. I also think you saw Doug McDaniel, who was hitting everything at the rim early in the game. He just, again, lacked that burst in overtime and started just like putting up off foot floaters that to me were just lazy plays that, not lazy, but you could just tell he was out of gas. So I think that the Gators really, if I had to say like one thing that won this game, you can say offensive rebounding, as seems to be the case with every win. But I think just kind of overall, this was a depth win for the Gators.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think Trey Jackson played a little for Michigan. So even in that scenario, like they probably got 20 minutes from their bench, like totally. And Will Shedder, who started for them early in the year and actually had been playing like 17, 18 minutes a game, he played terrible in like 7 minutes. I mean, he came in, committed 3 fouls, turned the ball over twice. Like, and that was huge in the first half because like they went to their bench briefly. What parts of it exist, I guess. And those guys came in and Florida made a run, you know, and but for a sort of bad moment where Alex Condon just got a little too deep on a rotation, like, and it made it easy for Jalen Llewellyn to hit a 3. You know, they didn't get much from those guys when they were in the game anyway. Like you said, Llewellyn not healthy. Will Cheddar, I think, is a good defender, but just wasn't against Florida. Might be a good defender against some of the less athletic teams in the Big Ten. Had a real problem with Florida's like athletic guys. And then I think, you know, the other thing I would say was, you know, the other thing that I think we should credit like Florida where it's due, you know, I think you're absolutely right. Obviously, offensive rebounding win with 21 on the game. And then Alex Condon, for me, like just the first half he had offensively when Florida was kind of searching for things came into the game searching for things, and just Condon comes in and just plays kind of a stupid first half of basketball for a player that is what, like 10 games, 12 games into his playing career at this level. Like, I thought his first half was absolutely ridiculous, Eric, just sensational.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's another story to be taken out of this is Alex Condon closes the game and Micah Handlockton does not. I think you just have to start when you look at the last several games. I think you've just got to look at those two guys and say, like, hey, is Condon, you know, getting ahead of Handlockton on the depth chart? I think that when you kind of look at had locked in probably, well, I'd say certainly has the offensive rebounding edge, though it's not like that Alex Condon is bad on the offensive glass. Micah Hanlockton is just putting up outrageous offensive rebounding numbers. The rim protection is interesting because Condon is much more likely to get a help side block rotating and moving his feet. Condon a little bit more around the rim, but I just think offensively Condon brings so much more right now.
Yeah.
He's someone who just seems like so much more of a threat. Like if it's just, you know, and I've, a coach told me this that played against the Gators this year. It's just like happy every time that Micah Hanlockton catches the ball inside the arc. And I don't think that teams feel the same way about Alex Condon, who, again, I'm not saying is Hakeem in the post, but is much more comfortable getting to a hook shot, just much more comfortable finishing at the rim. And you're starting to see just the kind of the points, the amount of just possessions that end in a shot. Like, it just seems like Alex Condon is a little bit more of a threat. And it looks like the Florida staff feels the same way because, once again, we have Alex Condon closing out what, you know, turned out to be a very big game.
Yeah, no, great point on the fact that he was able to close out the game. The other thing about his shot blocking is, like, so two of his shots led to four – two of his blocks led to four transition points for Florida. And so, like, I know I've said this a lot on the show, and it's a point Eric has made, like, the best of the best shot blockers can block shots and create transition opportunities with their blocks. They're not like – like, it's okay sometimes on a help side block, for example, to like swat it into row 24. And like, people love that. And it gets the crowd going. And usually the guy screams at the camera and all that's fun. But like, a couple of Alex Condon's blocks were like, not only am I going to block the ball, like, I'm going to block the ball to Zion Pullen and we're going the other direction. And like, that is a really hard skill to do. And he's doing it in like game 12.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. That's not something I will I believe in. I don't know. That's a little like the game happens so fast. Like, for players to react and block shots, like, to get their fingertips on. I don't know. Like, whenever someone's like, oh, the best shot blockers, you know, keep it in bounds and get it to the teammate, then they show like grainy like video taken on a calculator of like, you know, like again, like Wilt. Yeah. Or, well, yeah. Like, and these guys like, that you can say by the time they drive that they're about to throw it into the fingertips of these big men, and then they can just get, I don't know, like, you just see like the speed of the game. I don't really think any player at the high level can consciously be like, I'm going to block this and block it to a team. Like, it's just, you know, I don't know. I just think players just like that block shots need to pursue the ball and put everything into just getting their fingertips on it. And it's like, when the best shot blockers in the game get their fingertips on the ball 2.5 times a game, I just don't think, I don't know. Yes, in a perfect world, every offensive or every block kind of goes the other way, but I don't know. And even again, like, those blocks worked. If you asked Alex Condon to be serious, hey, did you know you're sending that right to an outlet? I'd be interested what he said. And maybe someone can ask him that question, 'cause I feel like he would give a good answer either way, but
he probably would.
But I think I just also think, kind of like you mentioned, when you get those help side blocks and you pin someone on the backboard, that ball is going the other way. And I think that's also something you see with those shot blockers like him, who can kind of pursue and block shots or come a help side position. Usually it just kind of sends the ball back towards the middle of the floor, and that often goes to your own team. But and again, it's not to necessarily take anything away from Hanlockton, but it's just, you know, I think that the concerns we had about him are kind of showing themselves, and he's still a very good player and one that's giving good minutes. It just, I think that he's someone who's going to maybe be giving 18 good minutes and maybe not be the, you know, clear 28 minute workhorse. And Alex Condon is just much, much better than I expected him to be. People will know, and people who subscribe to the Patreon, when I was showing NBL1 footage from the summer, I was not, you know, I was like, hey, this is a good get for the Gators. Don't look for him to be doing anything big this year. And it's like, well, I think the staff has shown that at this moment, the staff has shown that he is their most trusted five. So I think the story is just really how good Alex Condon has been.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, so let me say this about shot. You might agree with this point. Like, his rim protection like this was a huge game for him in that capacity, not just as a shot blocker, but like to be able to play and protect the rim while banging on Terrace Reed was not something he would have been able to do like even a month ago. Right. And so I do think you see a lot of growth. And like there were five blocks of Terrace Reed shots and three of them were Condon blocks, two of them were Condon blocks, which again, I mean, my man was having trouble with Loyola Maryland's like 6'8", 295 pound, like two-star big. So like to do this with Terrace Reed, that's pretty impressive. And I could testament to kind of how like sometimes when you get a player who hasn't played a lot, they just continue to get better at a different kind of rate because, you know, basketball is there's still a you know, ball of clay, I guess, whatever cliche you want to use. And like, so I think some of that is really wild. Like the learning curve for Condon appears to be pretty quick.
Yeah. And that's definitely like, I would, you know, I would argue that it's was Florida's kind of biggest win so far from like player acquisition. I mean, like obviously there's like Walter Clayton has been very good and Zion Poole has been very good and Tyrese Hill has been very good, but like those are guys I think that we, you know, pretty universally expected to be pretty good. Walter Clayton has been much better than I expected. That's for sure. Yeah, I don't think anyone other than maybe Utah or St. Mary's who thought that they could sneakily grab Condon because they didn't think anyone would notice. Like, I mean, I just, Condon has been the player who has most drastically exceeded expectations. And I don't know if I would have believed it. If anyone said, oh, I think he's going to be someone who closes games at the high major level, like I just probably wouldn't have believed them. And if a coach said that, I would say, well, then why didn't you offer him? So, that was definitely one of the stories to me. And again, it's, I think that Zion Poole and like, it's super corny to go back to a secret scrimmage and use anything like that. But like, hey, in a secret scrimmage, Zion Poole had the ball in his hands and made a play one-on-one and, made a big play and won the game for the Gators, like, or whatever it was tied. I forgot what it was. Everyone saw the video. So it's like ever since a secret scrimmage, Zion Poole has shown that he is someone who makes big plays. And, you know, one of the issues for Zion Poole this year has been the jump shot. That was one of the major questions we had. He was on a pretty, I forget, Malik tweeted it out, I think a little while ago, oh for whatever Zion Poole was from three in the last several games. I think it was 0-for-5 in the last one. But hey, when the moment was big, he hit the big one. And I just think it shows that kind of his big play ability, his big play mentality, and also just the fact that like I think that Zion Poole is definitely the most trusted guy off the bench. And I think Tyrese Samuels was fantastic, but I think that Condon was maybe a little bit more impactful in overtime.
Yeah.
And I think Zion Poole was the most impactful overtime. So it's like, okay, so the two best players in clutch time came off the bench for the Gators while, you know, Tyrese Samuel put in work in regulation and everything. And it was still really good in overtime, but it's just like, yeah, there's not many teams that you can reasonably talk about two guys off the bench as being some of the better pieces. And and I think that, there's just, it's going to be an advantage the Gators have. I still wonder if Florida's high end kind of talent across the board can really compete with, you know, the best in the SEC. But here's a situation where I think Michigan's starting five is very, very good. Florida played with them. And then when it went to the benches, it was, you know, big advantage to Florida. So I'm curious, Neil, with Zion Poole playing so well, Alex Condon playing so well, would you anticipate any changes to the starting lineup? Or do you think that Florida kind of likes bringing in so much horsepower off the bench?
So I think that they love the role that they have for Poole. I don't think that's going to change. I do think it will be interesting to see if Alex Condon starts, since Tyrese Samuel, to his credit, has been so willing to just play the five. You know, like there was all this talk, remember, like, will he, he came to Florida to shoot threes and to play outside. And like, that has not been like, he has been so willing to just be a banger. And like, I thought the matchup with him and you called it, there was a lot of Samuel versus Kamwa. And like, first of all, like Olivia Kamwa is awesome. Like he is
he's a different player. Like he looks different than Tennessee.
He looks different. He clearly like took that 27-point game against Duke in the NCAA tournament and just ran with it from a confidence standpoint. Like I just thought he was just sensational. Like, it was a really fun college basketball game. And I thought he played great, and I thought Tyrese Samuel played great. And, like, that matchup was fun, and Tyrese Samuel seems very happy to, like, be in the role that he's in. So I wouldn't be stunned if, like, they started Condon at the four and just used Hanlockton off the bench, especially, like, as his game, like, clearly needs to improve from the offensive standpoint. By the way, you mentioned Malik. I want new listeners to know they should follow Malik if they're not, at Malik G on Twitter. He has a lot of good stuff that he tweets out, you know, in addition to his vast conspiracy theories. No, I'm kidding. So definitely make sure you check out at Malik G. But it's our guy Malik Grady, longtime listener. Yeah, so, I mean, to your point, I thought Will Richard was really, really good in both overtime periods as well, especially, like, kind of adopting, like, the role of, hey, if you need me to guard Namari Burnett, like, I will. If you need me to prevent Terrence Williams from assassinating us in the paint, like, I'm fine. I'll get in front of him. And then also, like, I love that Florida ran some dribble handoff and ghost actions and just got Will downhill towards the 10, and they worked. Now, Michigan has had trouble defending straight line drives and plays like that all year, but it still is good to see, like, Will Richard be so willing to attack and then knock down free throws, which continued to haunt this team a little bit. So I wanted to kind of make sure that I included Will Richard, not just because I had the opportunity to sit by his family, but also because, like, I thought he was very impactful on a night where, like, Walter Clayton and Riley Kugel were 7-for-28 from the floor and 2-for-13 from three-point range and had 6 turnovers. Like, if you told me that Florida was going to beat, like, a high-level Power 6 team on a night where that happened, like, I probably would have been like, I don't know how.
Yeah, well, and even, like, I mean, it's not like there was, like, garbage time in this game, but Walter Clayton got some points kind of at the end when the game was kind of out of – was kind of finished. So, I mean, he really had 5 points on pretty poor percentages for much of the game, and has just, you know, unfortunately continued to be the case, just turns the ball over like crazy when he's put into positions to dribble it too much, which I think is also why just Zion Pullen has just cemented himself as someone who's going to be out there at the end of games. And again, when you see what Walter Clayton has had success with this year, it's playing off the catch, off reversals. It's like that. It's just like every dribble he takes, especially dribble from more than 23 feet from the rim, there's just like diminishing returns with each dribble. And we've just unfortunately seen a lot of the turnover issues from the same things from Clayton. So thought that was a struggle for him, but thought he defended fairly well. I don't know. Like, there was times where I didn't think Todd Golden thought anyone was guarding well. And Neil, you probably didn't watch. I don't know if you watched this game back, but the mics were hot on the live broadcast on this one. And there was a lot of Todd Golden just like screaming for guys to defend. And in the second half, he called a timeout after the Gators gave up. And this is when I thought, like, oh, the Gators are probably losing this game, was because the Gators gave up a couple buckets in a row. Golden had a timeout, was screaming at his guys to guard. And I think Michigan scored on their first 3 possessions coming out of that timeout. And I was like, well, I think the Gators are probably losing this one. They didn't due to their resilience and depth. But I did think Walter Clayton was okay. But going back to defense, like, the one guy that I think is just bringing so much consistency on that end is Will Richard. And I think he led the Gators in minutes. And I just think, like, that could be the case just every single game. Like, he's just a guy that, like, I never – yeah, I'm just happy when he's on the floor at all times, whether it's, like, not that we've seen it much – we saw it a little earlier where he had to play some 4. You know, I'm okay with that. If he has to play a little bit more shooting guard, you know, I'm okay with it. And then just at the 3 guarding the best perimeter player on the opposing team and taking as many catch and shoot 3s as possible. Did he shoot well in this one? No, but still, that's probably the mark is if someone can go 2-for-8 from 3 and you're still happy that he's out there a ton. Like, yeah, Will Richard is just like the most – I don't want to say maybe he's not the most steadying presence. Maybe that's Zion Pullen with the ball in his hands. But it's just like, again, I think like when you even see on Twitter when people are mad at this guy and, oh, unfortunately, Riley Kugel has another bad game. you just never see Will Richard slander. Like, he has the highest approval rating of any Gator. And I think it's just like his ability to kind of contribute in so many ways.
No, that's a good point. Florida did get down by 7 early in the second half. You mentioned they called the timeout. Then they got scored on 3 more possessions. Florida's first stop in the second half came at 13:08.
Oh, my goodness.
So Michigan just kept scoring and scoring. I did talk to a staff member, and, you know, they changed their pick and roll coverage for the first time in the golden era in, like, early in the second half. They basically, instead of dropping all the time, they hedged some. I mean, it wasn't like a huge adjustment. We had a great question from, like, Alex Carter, another longtime listener, who was like, hey, can Florida, like, do they even have the ability to hedge, like, the rest of the season? If they're going to do that sometimes. And I'm like, I don't know, but we'll talk about that. I'm like, it worked tonight because it did sort of slow down Michigan's ability to just get into their pick and roll actions, which were really killing Florida. I thought Williams and McDaniel were obviously pretty lethal in that regard. That said, like, I think even before they switched it, you know, they did make a couple tough shots, not enough. I mean, there was the one, like, 30-foot stop that McDaniel made, where I think it was Condon that got, like, a little too far removed from where he was supposed to be out on the perimeter. And so, like, there were 3 seconds left on the shot clock. Like, he should have never have left Doug McDaniel, like, that alone, on a switch. But, like, that's really not an optimal switch, right? So I think, anyway, the point is, like, Florida did make a couple adjustments that helped them defensively, and they really did for a while slow down a very efficient Michigan team. And to Eric's point from the last podcast, not just, like, an efficient team, like, in the way East Carolina was a good offensive rebounding team. I just did air quotes with my fingers. Like, Michigan has played a difficult schedule and has been a good offensive team. And then after that stretch of 7 minutes with no stops, Michigan scored 9 points in 5 minutes, which I think was much better and allowed Florida to kind of claw back into the game.
Yeah. And in there was, like, yeah, the Jalen Llewellyn last shift where, yeah, he just didn't look very good. And, you know, Will Shedder just being kind of a catch and shoot guy. It's like, if he doesn't, you know, with those guys that are purely catch and shoot guys, it's like, well, if the ball doesn't find them, they're invisible. So, yeah, Florida definitely took advantage in those stretches. But yeah, you mentioned the pick and roll defense. I did not like it in the first half. And even again, up till late, like the kind of weaking everything where they send everything to Doug McDaniel's left hand.
Right.
He just ate it up. And again, I thought that Alex Condon didn't perform well in that setting, but he was put in a very difficult spot because Michigan was starting the ball screen so high and Florida was weaking it. And because of the drop, he was still able to get to his right hand if he wanted. So he just, like, turned the hips. There's times he just would turn Condon's hips 3 times with crossovers and finish. And, also, I do think even when they were hedging and late in the game where they still were kind of weaking things, like Zion Poland, who I thought played very good offensively, he kept getting rejected by McDaniel. And I know it's hard. Doug McDaniel's good, but I didn't think he guarded those on the ball very well at all. And just strategy-wise, I understand that Doug McDaniel is an undersized guard. But, like, believe me, I know from firsthand experience, trying to make him a scorer is not a good strategy. And you can see all season that when you – you know, try to play these stay at home on everyone else kind of coverage. Like in this case, like weak him, stay at home on shooters and make Doug McDaniel score 1-on-1. Like for 40 minutes, it totally went in Michigan's favor. Like I said, I think he completely ran out of gas and you started seeing him take these like scoop shot floaters from multiple feet outside the paint. He just didn't have that burst to get to the rim. But I think the Gators still got pretty lucky to have gotten some stops later in the game when their pick and roll defense wasn't very good, but it's also like, hey, at least, you know, Florida went in with a strategy. I didn't think it was a good one, but you at least like to see those changes versus like, oh, we're just, you know, this is our one ball screen coverage, no matter what. Going to Alex's just going back to Alex's question about, could they hedge? Yeah. Like, you know, they didn't do it at all last year. It doesn't mean that it's like, you know, people still ask me like, well, you know, like do the Gators know how to play zone? I'm like, you know what? I think these guys can figure out how to play zone if they so want to, but Yeah, but has Golden ever played zone going back to San Francisco? No. He did actually hard hedge a little bit at times with San Francisco. And again, I think that Florida's personnel would be pretty good. They've got all these big bodies that can set some hedges and said, like, I would have liked to see that and send Doug McDaniel going back towards half court and give yourself a chance to rotate and recover as opposed to just like giving Doug McDaniel advantage and seeing if he's not going to outscore you because he can. But I don't know. It's one of those things that like, I'd be interested to see if the Gators put in any more aggressive pick and roll coverages, but I would just say the sample size over last year and this year would be like, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily expect it.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. I did like the decision. I thought also contributing to Florida's ability to just slow them a little bit. Like I said, it was 9 points in 5 minutes and 30. So that's pretty good considering what Michigan was getting the rest of the game. And that contributed to Florida kind of clawing back in the game and then ultimately taking the lead. And I do think Riley Kugel contributed to that. Now, he wasn't a factor in overtime because he was turning the ball over and not playing good offensively. But I did like the idea of putting him out on McDaniel and just showing Doug McDaniel something different to kind of, I don't know, like in football, we talk about like changing your eye level. And like, this was a little bit different for Doug McDaniel, just somebody that said, all right, if he's just going to make tough shots or if he's going to get back to his right hand very easily, we can at least extend him and push him out with Kugel, make him start higher. He's comfortable doing that anyway. As Eric said, they start their ball screens so high, but I thought Riley played pretty good defense on him. And then Riley had a really nice block on Burnett towards the end of the game. And obviously really unlucky that it just went right to a Michigan player.
Yeah. And I was kind of curious if you were going to have anything to add to the overall Riley Kugel conversation. I mean, we already kind of had that talk before. I mean, unfortunately, this isn't Riley Kugel's first kind of poor game where he doesn't play closing minutes because he, again, I'll just say too, I think people are like, oh, he's playing like trash. Oh, they've got to bench him, whatever. Where it's like, to me, it's just like, well, Will Richard and Zion Pullen and Walter Clayton are playing better. I mean, it was, I will say, in the last time we talked about this, it was a very good Walter Clayton game, a very good Zion Pullen game, a very good Walter Clayton or Will Richard game. This was a very good or a really solid, I'll say, Will Richard game, a really solid Zion Pullen game, and not so much a good Walter Clayton game. And still, it was Riley Kugel on the bench and Walter Clayton on the floor. So, yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, to me, watching Kugel, I think just fundamentally he doesn't know when to be aggressive offensively. Like, he does not know the actions on the floor that are designed to get him to score, and he does not understand fundamentally when he should be looking to attack. And then you see situations where they have a pin down into a dribble handoff and his first reaction is just to stop, or he gets a dribble handoff into a ball screen, his first reaction is just to stop. And it's like, no, like, those are the times to be athletic and get downhill. Like, you're like, Florida's running these actions to give him an advantage, and he doesn't want the advantage. He wants to get back into a step back three. So, like, again, there's just so many times where it's like, okay, Florida runs a set to get him going downhill, and he doesn't use it, and he backs it out, and it ends in a step back three. So, like, the entire point of getting him in action to get downhill is just like completely negated. And the fact that Florida runs these things for me is telling me that, oh, they think, oh, he's athletic, we're gonna get him downhill. And his actions, and people, again, on Patreon, because I did a video about this weeks ago, will show that he fundamentally does not know when he's supposed to attack. So I do think that either he's like going against the plays and the coaching staff, because I would think any scoring player wants to be put in scoring positions. I think fundamentally he doesn't understand what he's supposed to be doing in those situations, and he needs to be coached up to know, hey, this is the situation we're putting in. Like, when we run the set for you, this is why. This is where you're trying to get to on the floor, and this is how you're trying to finish. And because right now he does not seem to understand, and then it's just going to be step back threes, and he's very good at shooting step back threes. It's just a situation where he is probably going to shoot around 33% of those no matter what. So you might as well give it to him at the end of a shot clock and like not really waste time running sets for him at this current moment. But yeah. And again, I just think that's the, and then even the big still overarching conversation about Kugel is, yeah, he is very much struggling to finish in the paint. I don't know how conscious he is of that to the point of like, oh, does he not want to go downhill because he has struggled to finish there?
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. Just everything he wants to do is to get to a step back or his pull up. And that part of his game is still very good. And I don't think should be taken away. And then it's so at some point he needs to either learn what Florida is trying to do for him offensively, and he needs to use those actions, or Florida needs to stop running it for him. Because I'm also at the point where, like, when Florida is running these actions for him, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you know, he's not going to use it, and you're just wasting clock and contributing to a half court offense that isn't very good. So I would say a little bit more of the same for Kugel, other than at least he is not allowing offensive frustrations to take away from his effort on the defensive side.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And that's the biggest, you know, point is that he still is playing defense at a very high level. He's still Synergy's best on ball points per possession defender. I know his defensive box plus minus was pretty bad against Michigan, but you know, still been a guy that Florida can put on the other team's best guy on the ball, and his quickness and length and athleticism and strength, I think have all been pluses for Florida defensively. But yeah, I mean, I said a couple people asked, like, that came, and thanks to the folks that came to say hi at the Michigan game, but a couple people asked me at halftime, why don't they run stuff for Riley Kugel? And I was kind of like, well, they do. He just doesn't do the things that I think they want him to do when they run it. And I'm glad that you mentioned that, Eric, and kind of explained that, because it is not that this staff is like, hey, we have our all SEC first team, all SEC guy. We're not going to run anything for him. That's not mm-hmm. what's happening. So I guess the only thing I think you kind of left out is, I guess the option C would be like run different stuff for him.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
You know, like, okay, he doesn't want to do these plays, or he doesn't understand how to execute them, or he's hesitant because he's not finishing well at the rim when he's north-south. Like, okay, so, like, let's run him off a screen and get him a catch-and-shoot three. Like, you know, just something to get him going, because you keep thinking, like, you know, maybe he'll see the ball go in a few times and things will change, and that just hasn't been the case yet. You know, he hasn't had this game. And then when he did have those two games, like, there wasn't much carryover. Like, Florida – got two huge games from him, lost them both, and then there wasn't any carryover after that.
Yeah, I actually remember now that you mentioned it. I didn't remember this at first, but there was the play too where they like ran in isolation for him on the left side of the floor in the mid post, and he hit a turnaround jump shot. Yeah, it's even a situation like there. It's like, and on the broadcast, they were like, oh, like, you know, look, like they're finally running stuff to try to get Riley Kugel going. And it's like, again, my kind of thought was like, hey, they give him opportunities, he doesn't use them. And
right.
when, and again, you can also extend it as well to pick and roll, where again, he doesn't want to turn the corner and get downhill in a pick and roll. He wants to hopefully get a switch and get back into a step back. Again, I could see, like, when people watch that, it probably looks like, oh, Florida's not running anything. Cause look, as soon as Kugel catches the ball, he's stands and surveys, but it's like, no, well, they gave him opportunities, but yeah. And even again, so you're seeing that they're trying to get him involved in different ways. They gave him a mid post ISO. Mm-hmm. And again, in those situations for someone as athletic as him, I would like him to face up, and because he's one dribble from dunking it on someone when he catches the ball there, it was a turnaround jumper. He made it, but how much is Florida, especially a staff that's interested in analytics, going to give mid post ISOs for Kugel? I'm going to venture not a lot. So, hey, it's good to just throw stuff and see what works. And when you saw that ball go through the rim, you might have thought, hey, like, you saw a jumper, like, it was pure, it's pretty nice, get that shake to the baseline, hit a jumper. But it's like, yeah, is Florida going to do that 15 times a game? I know that I'm going to boldly state that I don't think they are. So I'll be interested in what they do next or what. I don't think they need, well, like you said, the option is certainly there to just, hey, run different stuff for him. But I think that Florida's simple actions they're running for him, he needs to understand what's going on, and he needs to understand how to attack out of those. I don't think it's necessarily Florida has to run different stuff for him. I think he needs to be taught what to do within those actions.
Yeah, no, I think those are really, really big time points. I guess we should close the Michigan conversation. And we've talked about him I think quite a bit on the last two podcasts, but man, like just the way that this team is so much more stable and under control when Zion Poland is running the show. And, you know, I know I said, I think they're going to come keep him coming off the bench because it doesn't seem to matter. Like he's still going to play 30 minutes a game. So, you know, I guess if it's not broke, it's kind of a don't fix it type situation. But, you know, Doug McDaniel was the KenPom MVP for those who are super into that. But, like, it's rare to see a guy play 40 minutes and have, like, the offensive KenPom rating that Zion Poland had in this game. And it was, like, 140. So maybe just discuss how Zion Poland sort of against a not very good defense, but still, like, lifted Florida's offense out of the muck to where they could post 106 points in 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, like, again, I was kind of mentioning it, or I was going to mention it earlier, I don't think, but, it, like, he just had such a physical advantage. There's a guy who understands how to score and understands when to attack, and you just saw him get defenders on his hip, get to the rim, and he drew so many fouls, so he got to the line a whole bunch. He actually, I was kind of surprised. I didn't remember him missing as many shots as he did inside the arc. But yeah, I just feel like he is someone who, like when you look at where guys are best right now, again, I think Walter Clayton has shown an incredible ability to play off the catch and attack downhill. And of course, hit catch and shoot jumpers, not someone I love as much with the ball in his hands. And then Zion Poland, not so great playing off the catch, but is someone who I just think is so much more trusted as a pick and roll ball handler, as someone who gets to the rim. And again, I just think he is someone who with every ball screen is just looking to get a paint touch. And I just really appreciate that about his game, that he's going to try to get an under control paint touch. And if he can score or draw contact, he does that. Or obviously if he can kick it out, he can do that as well. But yeah, I just think he's very, like, Poland, I think, understands the game at a pretty high level. And I think he understands his own game and his limitations as well. Like, yeah, we saw him take maybe a couple threes. He shouldn't the last few games, but even as he was like 0-for-5 and 0-for-4, I thought he was generally taking good ones that you want him to take. It obviously looks good when he hits the big threes here, but I think it's like also worth noting he wasn't chasing 3-point shots. I mean, he took one that he pretty much absolutely had to with whatever it was, 8 seconds left, 9 seconds left, and drilled that one. But yeah, I think that he is a steadying presence for sure. And yeah, I think that, like you said, I think it's probably likely that Florida keeps the rotation currently as it is. But yeah, in those last 5 minutes, I think it's tough for me to imagine Pullen not being on the floor, particularly with the turnover problems of some of Florida's other guards.
Yeah, no, you know, one thing that Florida will, I mean, we'll see. Maybe Florida can get right playing Grambling, although Grambling is athletic as we kind of shift to Florida's game tomorrow afternoon, 4 o'clock, as we record here on a Thursday before Christmas. The Gators at home in the Zectic Arena. It's actually a game in like our preview show that when we were talking schedule, that we were kind of like, you know, got to be careful because they beat Vanderbilt a couple times last year. They beat some other like good teams last year too, actually. And, you know, it's been kind of Colorado. I think they beat last season. Like it's been a disaster for them. Nothing short of a disaster for them this season so far. Now they have played one of the toughest schedules in the country, to be fair to Grambling, I think. But they can't shoot. That is kind of, we're at conclusive evidence stages that they cannot shoot the rock, and they not only cannot shoot the rock, they don't take care of the basketball. So when those two problems kind of manifest themselves, it becomes very difficult to win. And the third little complication for them that I wrote down was they really missed Cartier Gordon, who was like this big that just kind of bullied his way through the SWAC last season. It was like first team all SWAC and led them to the final of the SWAC conference tournament where they lost Texas Southern again. And then Terrence Lewis, who was a high recruit at Iowa State, a 4-star player, has not been healthy. He got a waiver and hasn't really been healthy. And that plus an injury to Jordan Smith, who was like one of their best big men down the stretch last year. They had a deep front court, has sort of compounded all their problems. So they come into Gainesville 2-9, and they really haven't been competitive with anyone good except for Drake, which was one of their first games with their full complement of players. And in that game, you know, they were within five late and then lost by 12. But I don't think this is a game that should challenge Florida very much. Although one where, like, if Florida gives up a bunch of points, it will be interesting to watch, like, what happens to their KenPom defense rating.
Yeah, when Grambling 319th in KenPom, 268th in defense, 331st in offense. So, yeah, if you don't KenPom has the Gators running by 24. You know, if you don't do that, it'll be reflected in KenPom and the net. But yeah, Grambling State, as is the case with most low major teams, is just, you know, gets gutted by the portal. Can be some difficult places to recruit to. I thought that, like, one player that the staff was pretty excited about, that was in, I think, just injured to start. He was a junior college transfer. He's a really good junior college player. Is Antoine Burnett. He had 15 points against Drake in his first game of the season. So, like, as like a 6'5", 200-pound guard. So, like, you know, they played competitively with Drake. They were down by, you know, close to, like, by like 8 to 10 points most of the game, and then it got out of hand at the end. But you know, they played a competitive game with a good Drake team, and then suddenly it's like out of nowhere they have Antoine Burnett scoring 15 points and rebounding, and then you're like, oh, maybe they have something going here. You know, a team that can play Drake competitively. Drake is 64th in KenPom as a reference. You're like, oh, this, you know, maybe they actually have something going. And then last night they lose to Southeastern Louisiana 48-47, which speaks to their offensive struggles. And yeah, the simple metric to look at would be just the fact that they shoot 27.4% from three. So that really makes everything difficult. They do have a point guard who's a lot of fun, Kentavious Dozier, a junior college transfer. Again, just like a paint touch little guard who's just, you know, plays tough, pretty electric, draws a lot of fouls, doesn't really shoot it, but he's a very crafty finisher on the inside. But yeah, you've got a guy who's just someone who doesn't shoot with a bunch of guys who doesn't shoot around him. But really, really fun game. So they played against Washington State, who we love, and he had 34 points. So again, that was in a game that was not competitive. So, you know, I don't know how many of those points were in garbage time necessarily, but watching highlights from that game, yeah, he can really fill it up. So, like, you know, if they're going to be competitive with the Gators, you're probably looking at, can Dozier score something like 34 points like he did against Washington State? That would be a very fun, you know, well, maybe you don't want to put that, we don't want the game to be scary for the Gators, but if Kentavious Dozier had 34 points to win the Jake Winderman most points against Gator as a long shot guy, that'd be something. And then just another thing, like, the Gators haven't seen a lot of zone. Grambling will play zone. They'll also press a lot, and you know, they've only really played, well, they've mostly played good teams, you know, Dayton and Washington State and Drake and Iowa State and Colorado. So, like, they have pressed high major opponents, which you don't always see low major teams do. But, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, they, you know, these players kind of, when all you do is play bye games, and head coach Dante Jackson is just used to playing nothing but bye games. It's like, you know, you get used to, you got to try something different. You know, you put in a press and you give up 7 quick points, like, hey, you're just, you know, it's not going to phase him as much as some other guys who aren't used to that. So I'd expect the Gators to see a little bit of press. I expect them to see a little bit of zone. But yeah, just the talent deficit and the fact that it's just so hard for Grambling State to score. Yeah, it would not suggest to me that this would be a particularly dangerous game for the Gators, other than the fact that they just came off, you know, an emotional game. Now it's the last game before the holidays. And that's kind of, I think I put this, I forget what I talked about this. I said something about this on the Jake show, but something about how this has maybe, you know, maybe trap potential. And if this was last year's Grambling State team that beat Vanderbilt The Vanderbilt team that went on to beat the Gators twice that beat Colorado by 9 points, like pretty comfortably. Though that was at home, if you remember, the Pac-12 played the Pac-12 SWAC challenge, which was like a really cool thing to do. But then all these Pac-12 teams were losing to SWAC teams. So that was a little bit less cool. But, you know, this last year's Grambling State was 182nd in KenPom. This team is not that. And yeah, it very well could be a uncompetitive game on Friday.
Yeah, I don't anticipate it'll be particularly competitive, nor do I think Florida's December 30th game. I hope to do a show at some point before the new year with Eric. But I will say briefly that I don't think Florida's game against Quinnipiac and the Bobcats will be terribly competitive on December 30th either. Although, like, my tune on that might have changed had, like, Baker Dunleavy not broken Quinnipiac's hearts and been like, yeah, I'd rather be, like, the director of basketball operations at Villanova then continue to coach the Quinnipiac Bobcats. And that was tough because, like, when Dunleavy got that job, they were so bad. They were one of the worst programs in the country. And, like, they won 21 games last year, nearly won the Metro Athletic Conference regular season title. You know, I think just kind of were really on the up and up, and all those, a lot of those players stayed. A lot of them didn't hit the portal. So I think they had some continuity. They also haven't played anyone, right? Like if you look at Quinnipiac's schedule, like their toughest game to date was Yale, which they lost a kind of tight game at home. But yeah, there's not anything they do really that is going to be particularly stressful to the Gators, one would think. They do shoot the three pretty well, but they are not a team that is big. They are not a team that has a very big bench. They are 231st in bench minutes. So not a lot of guys like that can really stress you. But again, guys like Savion Lewis and Matt Belonk, who have like stuck it out at Quinnipiac when like they could have probably gone and played at other programs. And they have a transfer from Wofford named Amari Tice, who I thought was like a really intriguing little three-star prospect that committed to play for Wofford from a good program, Newburgh Pre-Academy in New York, and then kind of like just hated South Carolina. He just hated living there. And he's like, was really open about it. Like, I just don't like it here. And it was like kind of heartbreaking for Wofford because like, a high three-star is like a good recruit for a program like that. And so he went home to Quinnipiac and has been, looks like much, much more comfortable playing, you know, for playing closer to home. I think he's a nice shooter, a guy who can drive and a guy who's really, really active on the glass. The kind of 6'7", 220-pound wing that like, has given Florida problems, like, or at least did for years in the Mike White era, because Florida was like, we don't have any of those guys. You know, so he could be like an interesting player to watch that could go off, but I don't think the Gators are going to struggle too much against the Bobcats either.
Yeah, Belonk was, it was in the portal. Like, I don't, and he had offers, I will tell you that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then decided to stay.
Like, and he's at his fifth year. So like, it was not even like, you know, like he was a great, he could have graduate transferred. I don't know what the academics are like there, but like, if it was because, you know, he was academically, you know, focused, well, he already had his degree from there. And so I don't really know what the story is, but he's a 6'4" player who's got good feel. Again, he's not a good athlete. He can, you know, shoots it okay, but he's just kind of one of those like guys that you see a lot at the low major level that like, just like are these like 6'4" do it all kind of guys that rebound a bit and pass it a little bit and are pretty good at like are really good in transition, but you don't know why because like they're not athletic, but they're just so smart. And yeah, so I actually think he's really good. He's fun to watch. And then I do think their point guard is super, super fun to watch. Savion Lewis, he's first in the country in assist rate. And again, he's like, again, just like what you use, not that you see a lot of these guys, but you often see these year to year. Like a 6 foot guard who cannot shoot whatsoever. So he's in his fifth year of college basketball. He's taken 27 threes. So, and pretty much all of them are late shot clock prayers. But he is first in the country in assist rate. So his assists, like just looking by opening up his KenPom page, his last like games was like 9 assists against Holy Cross, 8 against Yale, 6 against Navy, 8 against Niagara, 8 against Canisius, you know, had 11 early against Central Connecticut, 9 against Massachusetts, who's like UMass has been the best team they've played this year. So again, I just find like that, like player archetype. I don't know. I don't know if it's like a winning archetype, but it's really fun to watch these guards that are just out there looking to pile up as many assists as possible and are like aggressively trying not to shoot. I find it very fun. So again, I do think that's those are guys that I do enjoy watching, Belong more so, but you mentioned earlier that they haven't played anyone. I don't know what this is. Another just like weird thing about the Bobcats is like, again, you would see so many kind of low major opponents. They go and play mid-major opponents, I guess I should say, the MAC with 2 A's. Somewhere on that. Anyways, you'll see them go play like a bunch of bye games. It's like the Bobcats like never play bye games. Like they don't play high major. Like I think this playing against Florida will be the first high major team they played in several years. So clearly there's not like a mandate to go and make a bunch of money and guarantee games. So like, and when you see that happen, you don't know if it's because like they're not serious about basketball, or if they're so serious about basketball that they, you know, are like, there's investment that doesn't consist of making your team go and lose bye games. So I don't know what the case is, but you might have, you know, hinted at it perfectly when your head coach, Baker Dunleavy, leaves for a non-coaching position, essentially. So, interesting team. I guess maybe that's a trap game potential, but it's a bye game around the holiday season. So who knows?
Those are always dangerous. I did want to add that they have a guy, Richie Springs, who's their starting center, who is Danny Hurley's first signee at UConn. I always think that's fun. And like you can imagine that minutes became hard to come by when he was in that front court at UConn last year. But he's a national champion, and now he's at Quinnipiac. Fun facts, right? Like, just like my favorite basketball sports fact right now is UConn being 4-0 in national title games this century and 4-16 in conference openers.
Yeah, that's baffling.
Basketball is weird. Profound deep thoughts from me days before Christmas. I'll let Eric sign us off.
Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.